Bill Martinez. For more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. My good friend Sargis Sangari, the lieutenant colonel, is with us, and we're going to be talking foreign policy. He says that when it comes to foreign policy, you must understand backyard wars, and this is what's been going on in the Middle East for a long time. He is Iranian-born, former U.S. Army lieutenant colonel. He understands how Iran thinks and what America's response should be. Sargis, good to have you back with us. How are you, sir?
It's good to be here. It's been a while, Bill.
Yeah, too long. But hey, let's get about the people's business here. It's a simple proposition as you lay it out. It seems that here we are with the West trying to get involved in the Middle East, and or not even trying. We're involved in the Middle East, and for you. Understanding, the mindset, the worldview of the Middle East, some of this stuff has to be like chalk hitting the chalkboard in the wrong direction. And along with that, we're seeing, American resources, blood and treasure, in a sense, being expended unnecessarily at times. Is that fair?
It is fair, and that's one of the reasons I'm involved in what I am involved in, because I've had a lot of friends who have sacrificed downrange, to include losing their life. So we want to make sure that U.S. comes out a winner at the end, and that region finally gets to a functional democracy. With that said, there's a lot of steps that we've taken, a strong position of coming to the table to negotiate with Iran.
Right. When you mention backyard wars, help our audience understand what you mean by that.
I try to explain it from a simple perspective. Most people do have backyards in their own houses. And the way I explain it to folks is that if a critter, a squirrel, comes into your backyard and tries to attack your apple tree, you take certain steps against them. Well, world polities are the same. They just... individuals that are looking at protecting their backyards. And for U.S., Venezuela would be its backyard. For China, North Korea would be its backyard. But these backyards have also extended and become larger, given the fact that now we have an economy globally that is so intertwined, to include the fact that you have a Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which when Russia goes into Venezuela, brings Iran, brings China with it. And then the fights that are taking place globally have additional friction points that we have to address when it comes to our backyards.
Well, and the thing that's tough is that when it gets like that, Sargis, is that then it's not neighbor to neighbor. A neighbor to neighbor might be an easier way to solve the problem, but when you have other interests coming in, with each interest, you could have an uh-oh moment that, something's fired off, they didn't mean to do it, and you ignite something, and next thing you know, you got a firestorm on your hands.
You do, and the other piece to it is that we see our backyards as an extension of our homes. Mm-hmm. However, the states that we see as our backyard do not see themselves as a backyard. Hence why Iran is bucking against the U.S. and the Persian Gulf, and why it is possible that it's even bucking against the U.K., one of our allies, when it comes to some of the deals that they're trying to strike economically within the region.
A lot of pressure on Iran. The mullahs are responding, the Ayatollah. You have a sense, and you would know better than I, certainly. But, Sargis, you have this sense that they're getting desperate. These sanctions upon the country have been taking a big toll, and you don't have a lot of happy campers there on the streets of Iran, do you?
No, you don't. I mean, there's no money flowing through the process. There have even been a reduced barter system when it comes to land issues. With that said, you have moderates. They're fighting the, for the better term, the extremists within Iran. And this internal struggle is still taking place. Then you have Iran fighting against Saudi Arabia, trying to be the leader of Islam. And then you have the U.S., Russia, and China jockeying to be able to be the global leader within the region, to include the Europeans trying to get a better footprint for themselves economically, which is why UK, France, and Germany are bypassing our sanctions against Iran.
Is Iran being forced into a nuclear corner here in as much as that they figure, well, if they don't, if they're not able to arrive to full nuclear capacity, that they're just going to be, you know, subjected to too much against them, that this is a fight for survival. Is this the way they're seeing it?
Not for the moderate, but for the extremists, yes.
Yes,
because they
right.
know at the end of the day, if there's a regime change, there's going to be a lot of blood, and it's going to be their blood in the streets. However, if they can get to a position where they could get back to the negotiation tables like they did before and strike a better deal for them, and they still become the leader of Islam within the Middle East, then it's okay, because they've been able to achieve a victory and they're being able to at least retain their power structures within the Iraqi government. I should say Iranian government, with just simple transitional viewpoints taking place internally that would finally take the old-timers off the picture and then bring some new blood into the Iranian politics.
In reality, do you see them ever foregoing their nuclear ambitions?
No, not the not the extremists, because their focus has always been the destruction of the state of Israel. And they know that a nuclear weapon gives them that leverage. Because of that, you know, you have to somehow transition the extremists out of the picture, whether it be an internal issue or be with these pressures that we're putting on them. When the U.S. And President Trump put sanctions against the supreme leader of Iran, he also highlighted the fact that there is an individual who says that I am the lead for Islam, fighting against the United States, but yet he's got all his money that he's taking from the Iranian people invested in major Western companies that are profiting him directly.
Well, it was reported that Iran fired off a couple of missiles last night. What are you seeing? Is this just saber rattling on their part? I mean, because they got to feel some pressure. You've got these, you know, whether it's England, the United States saying, okay, maybe we need to, you know, start escorting, you know, boats, tankers through the Strait of Hormuz, because we can no longer accept, you know, Iranian rebels, you know, coming in and, you know, confiscating these tankers.
Everything that is happening because it's part of this negotiation process. Even war eventually is a negotiation to get to the peace table. So we're hoping that we don't have to get to that point. What is internally happening with Iran and some of the steps they're taking has a lot to do with them trying to jockey themselves to be in a better position for this future negotiation that will
exactly.
take place on a new deal.
Yeah, because they're, as you said, they're fighting for their survival. What's the alternative here? And somehow, you know, to be forced, I mean, they're getting compelled to come to the bargaining table one way or another. It's just a matter of how much leverage will they bring to that bargaining table. And, you know, with Donald Trump calling the question in the manner in which he has, what's the best that Iran could probably get from the U.S. right now in the Trump administration?
I think Iran would like to see us to get to a treaty. The problem is that would have to be within Congress. And the way Congress is eating each other out, there's no way possible for us maybe to get that position. Iran has already struck a deal with the U.S., so is in a strong position. Maybe broke the deal with Iran. They were put in a stronger position, because their issue is that, okay, we're going to come to the table, we're going to strike a deal with this administration, give us a guarantee that the next administration won't come in and break that deal either. So hopefully we can get to a treaty possible.
Well, it has to be confirmed in Congress. That was the problem you had, is this was all done unilaterally by the Obama administration. There was no approval. I mean, we had money being shipped in pallets in the dark of night, and this arrangement that people said, whoa, this is crazy. John Kerry saying, oh, it's the best thing since ever. And, you know, Donald Trump comes in and go, this is the worst deal ever. So that's why he exited stage left. Our conversation with Sargas Sangari will continue. Stay with us, America. The very things that matter to to all Americans. This is Bill Martinez. It's what we're all about at 14 minutes before the top of the hour. He is the CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement and the founder of the nonprofit, the Assyrian Initiative. He is also Iranian-born, former U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel. Sargis Sangari continues with us. Sargis, you and I have discussed, in fact, have supported you with the Assyrian Initiative, and it's been a while since we had an update on it, and you know, it's been very very concerning because of the Assyrian genocide that has been taking place. And you know, this is you know, for you, a desperate call that we need to do something you know, for the Assyrians before it's too late, if we're, you know, not beyond the tipping point already.
We are probably beyond the tipping point, Bill. And I will tell you, as I've told the Assyrians, your past is a harbinger of your future. And we are right now at a point where we're probably expecting another Assyrian genocide, probably within the next 10 years, if not earlier. I don't know if there's going to be any Assyrians that are going to be left in the Middle East when that next genocide takes place. But that said, first of all, very much thank you, Bill, for everything you did for us. You know, when you helped us, especially on the fundraising effort, you saw how some of the key U.S. leaders came to call to say support the United Assyrian Appeal. We had still guys on the battlefield at that time. We have pulled the Assyrian army off the battlefield because the Sunni Muslim Kurds and the Arab Sunnis and Shia in Iraq are intent on killing each other in the future. And we didn't want to be part of that fight.
Exactly.
However, the multi-families have been returning now to Assyrian in the plane, and we're trying to get at least support for them to be able to build their houses and start some development back in within that region. The problem is any organization that we've had that have supported Assyrian people within the Middle East, to include the Assyrian Church of the East, have always been under very strict requirements. Recently, the British placed sanctions on the Assyrian Church of the East, which had initially given money to release his hostages. Now, the Sunni Muslim Kurds gave money to release the Yazidi hostages. Yazidi organizations did so. Many other organizations have spent money. You talked in the last segment yourself about the fact that you had the British oil tankers being captured by the Iranians because the British had taken an Iranian oil tanker. Well, the British were using that Iranian oil tanker to negotiate the release of their hostages. Unfortunately, when it comes to the Assyrian Christians, you get sanctions placed on you by Western powers because you tried to get some of your people released as far as hostages are concerned. No money and support comes for Assyrian military force structures because you tell them that you have to be under the Hashi Shabi, which the State Department told us under Obama, and the current State Department has placed sanctions against them and put some of those individuals on the targeting list. And when they have been told to go and join the force structures for the Peshmerga to be under the Kurdish force structures, they have turned around and not provided any funding and support that would trickle down to the Assyrian forces to begin with. So this is what the Assyrian Christians are going through, and let's be factual about one thing, that since 2003, with the U.S. military in full force being in Iraq under the previous administration, even under Bush's administration, and has some force structures currently under current administrations, with the EU being in Iraq, with NATO being in Iraq, with other key allies that are not part of NATO being in Iraq, Assyrian Christians went from 1.5 million to barely 150,000 remaining. And this genocide has continued on the watch of the Western nations because we just do not support the Christians in the Middle East.
And all this property that was controlled by the Assyrians, I mean, this is, you know, ancient Mesopotamia. I mean, this is, you talk about the richness of culture that is right there into Assyria, that's all being absorbed. And, you know, gosh, the Assyrians must feel like, you know, they're the worst of the worst. I mean, it's like, why are they so meaningless and inconsequential?
Their meanings are inconsequential because people within the bureaucratic systems have struck deals with others that they cannot rely upon. But it's very hard once you go to your boss and say, hey, I think you should work with the Sunni Muslim Kurd. And then you realize that the Sunni Muslim Kurd is the reason why Iran has been able to move its missile systems into the hands of Hezbollah in Lebanon, because they literally use Northern Iraq and Highway Number 2 to do that. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult to say you need to support the Muslim Sunni Kurds when you realize that ISIS was moving oil tanker trucks, Lebanese plated, to Northern Iraq, which is under Kurdish control administered region, into Turkey, and Turkey was turning around selling that oil for cheap to the Europeans. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult to go and say, hey, sir, you know, that decision I made a long time ago, we might want to switch off and move off of that decision, because people at the end of the day care more about their jobs than they and their promotions than they care about the fact that they may have to go to their boss telling them we made a mistake here, let's readjust.
Exactly. Sargis, it almost seems like, you know, if I can say this, the Assyrians, you know, their land just happens to be in the wrong place. I mean, they're in the crossroads and the hotbed, and they're caught in the crossfire of, I mean, you talk about backyards. I mean, when you're in a neighborhood and you're sharing a backyard with all these antithetical forces, and some of this stuff, it almost seems, if I might be so naive to suggest, that it's a bit nuanced. But it's nuanced enough to put the Assyrians in jeopardy. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, the Assyrians have always been in that geographic area, and that geographic area, because of where it sits, has always been under conflict. Even if you look at the Khabar Valley, which is where the Assyrians were had their villages in Syria, the Hittites and the Egyptians fought over that piece of land because it was still strategic. The land didn't move. The people may have changed.
Right.
The problem for the Assyrians is that Assyrians have their legitimate legal claim to that land. Now, what happens in D.C., because we have so many different denominations that are trying to jockey for their denomination rather than for the overall security of the root of Christianity in the Middle East, that they continuously undermine each other and start referring to the Christians of the Middle East as Assyrians as a collective, ethnicity-wise, with different denominations. They break them down into only denominations. And once you say, I'm the Christian, I'm an only Christian here, not only do you delegitimize their claim on the land, but you put them in the crosshairs of ISIS, ISIL, Al-Qaeda, Iraq, Al-Qaeda, and whatever else would come later on.
And the thing is, what we know about the culture is they're peace-loving. You know, it's a peace-loving culture. They're not looking to go to war, but I'll tell you, in some sense, you wonder why the Assyrians, but for their own, I guess, spiritual heart and their own belief in God, it's a wonder that they haven't put a band of, an aggressive band of offensive attacks against these people, because it's almost like, you know, they're just being overwhelmed because they're nice people.
Well, look, we have fought on the battlefields. Assyrians, as much as they're Christians, they're very much
but they're not aggressively going out. I mean, they're just protecting what's there. They're not going out and acquiring land like ISIS and Hezbollah, or tormenting their neighbors,
yeah.
Right?
The reason being because it would be very difficult. Even when we had the Assyrian army on the battlefield and we were conducting defensive position operations, on our left was the Sunni Muslim Kurds. Behind us were the Iraqi Arab. And if we tried to move aggressively against ISIS that was in front of us to destroy him, we weren't so much worried about ISIS because we knew once we got into the battlefield, we could wipe them.
Right.
And wipe them out and from their positions. We're worried about the Sunni Muslim Kurds shooting us in the back, or the Iraqi Arab moving his forces and taking a piece of property that we've already cleared. So at the end of the day, Assyrians would die and others would take their land, and we couldn't trust our allies. Even Israel, as much as it has struck deals with Saudi Arabia, as much as it gives money to the Sunni Muslim Kurds, it knows it cannot trust them. Mm-hmm. The problem is that Israel has nuclear weapons and has capability for structures to be able to counter against anything that those so-called allies, which are more enemies than allies, do mm-hmm. against them. We do not have that capability because the nations of the world have decided to give weapons, support, and arms to our enemies rather than to be able to support their Christian brethren within the region, in this case, the Assyrian Christians within the region.
Sargis, how can our listeners get involved and help with the cause?
For us, it's very simple. United Assyrian Appeal, 501c3, whatever donation comes, goes to the multi-families. And I would recommend them to read what we have been writing on the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. Maybe in the future, Bill, we'll have you back again to support our cause some time before the end of the year.
Always happy to do that. Whatever you need me to do, Sargis, you can count on me. Again, UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org is the website. That's where you want to go to donate, to get educated, to understand what's going on. And then the next thing you do is you pick up the phone or send an email to your congressman, congresswoman, your senators, and let them know that you support the Assyrians. Sargis Sangari, I'm Bill Martinez Live. Thank you, Sargis. Appreciate it, buddy. God bless.